Hey everyone, it's Jalian. The uprising for Black Lives has amplified the names of Black people who've been killed by police and in racist attacks. But the names of people who are Black and trans are lesser known due to transphobia and a lack of understanding from media and society. In St. Louis, organizers have been uplifting the name of Kiwi Herring, a Black trans woman who is known by her loved ones as a playful nurturer, adored by neighborhood kids and her own children, who she taught to value education and hard work.
It doesn't get easier, you know? It doesn't get easier 3 years later, thinking about Kiwi and the fact that St. Louis City police killed her in her home, you know, in front of her family, the most important people to her.
That's Charles Buchanan, founder of Flower Boy Support, a peer support group for masculine of center people of color, speaking at a memorial for Kiwi Herring at St. Louis's Transgender Memorial Garden in late August.
And it doesn't get easier when you search her name and it's 5 results or 10 results. Then nobody really knows her. You know, we have Mike Brown is the home of Mike Brown, the home of Ferguson, the home of Isaiah Hammond, you know, all these other names that we know very well, and we don't know Kiwi. And so I think it's important that we know her the way we know Mike Brown, and that we love her, and we love her even harder because we're all complacent in the harm that afflicts Black trans people, especially Black trans femmes and women. You know, we all are guilty of internalizing transphobia in our neighborhoods, in our families, in our places of employment. You know, we really are silent, even if we show up today.
Charles invited Kiwi's spouse, sister-in-law, and children to speak, and they shared their memories of Kiwi, along with their experiences of support from activists and LGBTQ people who mourned Kiwi while fighting for change. This is Cravonda, Kiwi's sister-in-law.
What matters is that you guys cared. And as far as I'm concerned, I just see a group of very loving people. And I want to say on behalf of my family, who was truly devastated 3 years ago, that I just feel like I'm totally indebted. When Charles called, he said, would you speak? I said, really? I'll do what you want me to do. Because as far as I'm concerned, I would love to come out and tell this group how wonderful they are. I would love to come out and tell this group how without you, I don't know how my family would have gotten through.
The memorial was followed by a march through the Grove, which is marketed as an LGBTQ-friendly entertainment district. Maxi Glamour, a non-binary artist, nationally acclaimed drag performer, and designer, led the march after explaining that the struggle for Black and trans inclusion is not just statewide, but extends to the local LGBTQ community as well.
There are people that are in power that own bars in our so-called gayborhood that promote exclusion. We are subjected to erasure within our own community every single day, be it for being poor, Black, trans, not passable in your stupid gender binaries. And as we speak out, we are met with opposition. And I think that's why we came here today, is that we need to be a force to oppose that opposition, because they're not going anywhere, and neither are we. There is a battle to be won for liberation.
Maxi's words were followed by a call to action from Amaya Cole, peer advisor for Metro Trans Umbrella Group, a resource and support hub for trans people in the St. Louis region. Side note, this audio clip contains a faint ambulance siren sound.
Kiwi, we have to remember Kiwi as an icon. Even though some of us did not know her, Kiwi is and forever will be an icon in this community, in the gay community, and every community to come afterward. Because, hey, if we don't make it known, if we don't lift her voice up, forever the trans lives and non-binary lives will be silent, and we would not be silent no more. So on this day, as we get ready to go forth, we're gonna say Kiwi, Kiwi, and say it loud as we can, proud as we say Black Lives Matter. We're gonna say Kiwi Harry, name as loud as we could get, and be proud that we had a sister who became an icon for this nation and who will bring change, not only to the state of Missouri, but to a nation as well.
Hey, hey, ho, ho.
On this episode, we'll hear from three leaders who are Black and trans about how they are confronting racism and transphobia, using art to promote social change, and staying inspired through the uprising. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here.
Hey everyone, it's Lauren. Uplifting the value of Black trans lives isn't just about saying the names of people who've been killed by police and in racist attacks. For Amaya Cole, it's also about loving and supporting people while they're still alive.
I'm literally helping trans individuals do the paperwork so they could get their name legally changed and get all their documents from birth certificates, driver license on down. Get those records changed in the government system so that they could, so when they go out in public, like they don't have to use their dead name to communicate. Also, like I do assist people, like if people having a hard time and just need a open ear, I'm basically tell them they could lean on me and I will listen and be that open ear for them, because I know as being Black and trans, it's hard for us.
The support that Amaya offers to her peers is essential for helping them get through daily life. But people also come to her for advice on how to navigate families and communities that aren't so welcoming.
I have people come to me talking about how to get the acceptance from family, how to have more self-confidence in being who they are when going out into the public, how to get your name changed, how to get a new social security card, help looking for jobs, help looking for housing. Like, those are the type of questions people come to me, and I'm more like I let people know I'm more than happy to help you look for a house. I'm more than happy to help you get your paperwork done so you could get your name changed. I'm more than helpful. I'm like, just lean on me as long, because one thing I always say, and I say this all the time, we as a trans community, rather a trans woman, non-binary, or trans male, we cannot be strong enough until we actually start showing love to one another. And that's a key thing I'm always letting people know. Start showing love to your own community, then you will see how powerful and how strong our voices will rise together.
As she leads people in the streets to raise their voices against racism and transphobia, She reminds her peers to embrace themselves as the first step toward social change.
Only interchange could bring change to the community. Only interchange could bring change to our nation. And that's how to start with us. First, embrace yourself, because I am an individual that had to do a lot of interchange. I had to see myself for who I actually was before I start walking out today, because today we probably wouldn't have an Amaya if I really did not see, was like, all right, like, you have to be comfortable. Like, if you're going to be trans, you have to be comfortable going out in public as trans and not only being trans at in areas where you are comfortable or around like individuals around you. Just go out in public, be trans altogether. Because I'm like, because thing is, because we're making our voices known. We are human as well. We are individual in this, and we just living out our truth. So if other trans individuals could seek interchange and everything, they will see change starts to happen around them, in our society, in our community, across the nation, and around the world. And that's where I truly believe that interchange will have to start from, is starting with who we are as an individual. Being an example for your peers, for your community, and just showing people, basically showing people the work that you do and the work that you wish to see in the community. I would say the more Black trans people that leads movement will be, the more solidarity and more being more confirmed that we are here as a people, and it will also get trans individuals more recognized and probably beloved by those around us. So I would say Black individuals leading movements, Black trans people leading movements is a key role in how things could actually progress with everything that we're currently going through now.
And as the fight for racial and gender equality continues, one thing that keeps Amaya motivated is the hope that maybe one day we can learn to accept each other fully.
Though that, yes, every time I get on social media, I'm seeing posts about uprisings across the nation, but I'm just, what's holding me up and keeping a strong head on my shoulders is communicating with people, talking with people, letting them know what we need to do as a community, like sit down. Like one thing I know that I have sat and talked with other Black communities with, and a lot of people might even disagree with me, but myself and a few other Black people have mentioned that as a Black community, it would be better enough if we stop saying Black Lives Matter until we fully embrace that ourselves as a community. Because the reason why we say that is because Black lives cannot fully matter until the Black community actually show how much Black lives matter. That means accepting your trans daughter, accepting your trans son, accepting your non-binary son, Blacks stop killing other Blacks, being more understanding and acceptable to disabled individuals, being more accepting towards people who have a mental health issue, and things of in that matter. So I'm like, just focusing and just really trying to encourage folks on like, hey, Black lives matter, but we have to make sure that before we voice it, that we actually are believing it as well. Because saying one thing is here, but if we don't believe it, all we see is nothing but lips moving with no power or no energy behind it. So if we don't believe it, how can we say Black Lives Matter if we're actually not believing that deep down within us?
Promoting acceptance and changing culture isn't easy, but it's something that Maxi Glamour has taken on. You might find Maxi wearing an outfit that is out of this world, twirling fans in front of St. Louis City Mayor Lyda Crewson's house, or playing the flute on the street corner at a protest.
I often balance the tightrope between like Black joy and toxic positivity. You know, I think I try to find the silver lining in everything because a lot of times we are told the negative stories of Black people. We're told how we're suffering, how we are poor, how we, you know, are subjected to disease. And we also are fabulous. We also are like amazing entertainers. Like, have you seen Beyonce? You know, Black people are amazing. And like, to be there and have a Soul Train line in the middle of the streets while we're like having an act of civil disobedience while having fun, it kind of helps perpetuate engagement because the movement, you know, one of my favorite quotes by the author of Persepolis was, you know, a revolution is like a bicycle. If you stop pedaling the pedals, it'll fall over. And people get bored. So you have to keep bringing them along. Come on, let's keep riding this bike. It can be fun. You know, we're almost there. Well, kind of, you know, and just like kind of putting that positive spin on it and kind of helping people get engaged helps people want to smile and get out some of the toxicity of the pain.
Maxi is a community organizer who runs an organization called Court that uses queer art as a platform for social change. They host balls and showcase Black queer art while engaging people politically.
Drag for me was a way to create this identity, to kind of like transcend the norm. I was always like a nonconformist and like the punk and like subversive culture way. And I think that like, for me, like that, you know, rock stars that got to embrace the femininity was like really like empowering. And as I grew up, I got to see like Divine and RuPaul and, you know, the club kids from the 80s. And I was like, that is amazing. They don't have to, you know, they don't have to pay attention to what gender says they're supposed to do or what society says they're supposed to do because of the gender. You know, they get to be wild and fabulous and change the world from, you know, the night side.
Art is also their way to bring up important topics that are normally off limits or even triggering.
Be it suicide, be it self-harm, be it like addiction or insanity, you know, being able to relate to someone, even if it's traumatic. I think art really, really, it builds that bridge between people because you may not understand me talking about my stuff, but if I paint a picture, like, you can find the beauty in the pain. And so I think that finding the beauty in trauma is definitely like art's value in the world.
In some cases, opening up conversation through art can literally save lives.
I get messages a lot from people thanking me. And it goes like, I had someone yesterday message me and said, hey, thank you for talking about mental health and these issues and helping me get like access to this number. I have been self-harm free for 6 months and I really look up to you and just thank you. And like, I cried. Like I was just like, wow. Like I'm just a blue polka demon going out there telling the world how about themselves and these people, like I help someone stay alive. And like, that's like, I think that's the validation that I'm doing like a good job. And like, that makes me want to continue doing it, even though sometimes I run out of capacity very, very, very often, but I'm still here.
The validation from fellow community members motivates Maxi to continue their work of confronting race and transphobia in the streets.
Being in community with people that are Black, trans, and suffering from generational poverty is something that kind of gets brushed under the rug. When we're at a lot of marches, there's a lot of people that come out for Breonna Taylor, for Anthony Lamar Smith, for Mike Brown. But there aren't very many people that come out for Toni McDade or Kiwi Herring or Nina Pop. And so that's my community. You know, those are people that come out to balls, that come out and come to drag shows. You know, these Black trans folk are people that, you know, I've been through. I've been there their whole lives and seeing them. And so, like, when no one else is talking about it, it's like, how intersectional are you? When you say you're defending Black lives, are you defending Black trans lives?
There were fewer people at the memorial and March for Kiwi Herring compared to other St. Louis area protests that have drawn hundreds of people. Maxie's hope is that more straight, cisgender people will develop solidarity with people who are trans, especially trans women.
For that rally, we didn't see as many straight allies as come out for, you know, people that got killed in other states. This is our city. These are our citizens. And it's, you know, I think that's one thing that is unfortunate is that we want to make sure that people are activists, not for the clout, but for actual change and fighting for things, fighting for people where you don't have anything to benefit is the most altruistic form of activism that could be done. And we need to see more of that.
In addition to seeking broader social change, Maxie also calls out racism and transphobia within the LGBTQ community.
I know it sounds stupid, but like people with glass houses can't really throw stones. So if you're ready to throw stones, you should start creating a better foundation so you can make sure that like your home is nice so that you can help other people's homes. You know, I don't think that we should attack people, but I think that we should, one, look at those with whom we are in community and say, hey, I need to hold you accountable. Hey, I need you to hold me accountable. We need to have like a collective litmus of what's going on. I think often we forget that subgroups of cultures are subjected to, you know, oppression. Like queer people are oppressed by queer people. And so the racial disparities within the queer scene is definitely there, as well as, you know, gender expansive people within the queer scene. If you aren't quote unquote a masked male, you're not going to be able to be invited to many parties. There are clubs in St. Louis who would make it free for men and only women, and like creating a space where, you know, only gay men are allowed. And, you know, things have changed, but it's, you know, that cis white heteronormative male dominated culture permeates through everything. The patriarchy is everywhere. And, you know, we have to start in our neighborhood to clean up the world.
Confronting power structures is a big task, and like Amaya, Maxie believes that leading by example is key.
I'm beginning to understand that I'm not going to be here forever. And if I don't help people help other people push these agendas, then what good is it for me to do it? I think we put too much, way too much, emphasis on particular people and movements. We should understand that leadership should have like humility underneath it, because if without the people, leaders are nothing. So we need to make sure that leader is training new leaders and that we're not obsessed with power. I always like look at finding your purpose as like, look at what you're good at and what you like doing and how that can apply to the world. You know, if you were a good painter and there are issues that are important to you, like say you're a great painter and you really care about environmentalism, then paint pictures of people saving whales, or like paint pictures of like your passion. Because I know it sounds weird and kind of harsh, but no one's going to care about the things in the world as much as you care about them. And if you could show the world how much you genuinely care about them, that is something that you can connect with your audiences, and that's how you can change their mind.
In the meanwhile, Maxie is inspired by the memory of their grandparents and great thinkers that came before them.
My grandparents being Black, living in rural Oklahoma, having like spray painted on their lawn and their driveway set on fire when they moved into their neighborhood, like using racial slurs against them, you know, and seeing like my granny being this boss woman who drives the Cadillac. She's like, I don't pay those white folk no mind. I do my job and they pay me. And just seeing like how like she's endured and like been fabulous, and like how like I never had to worry about like being queer to her. And she's just like, oh, you know, there's gay people at our church. God loves them too. And just like, unconditional love. You know, people that just love because that's the right thing to do. I think those are, you know, definitely heroes. And of course, like people that are mad, you know, like there's just so many people that are, I'm like looking at my bookshelf, I'm like trying to condense like every philosopher and political theorist and artist that like combated like social theory in their time, and like all of them are my inspirations. I think the movement is kind of a misnomer because it's movement. You know, I think of it as kind of more like a wave with lots of little drops. Some of them come in at certain times with more like capacity, and others change direction depending on like how other waves and like gravitate. You know, like that's super kind of cerebral to think about like a movement as wave, but I think not every single person in a movement has the same philosophy, ideologies, ethics, and morals. Fighting for Black lives doesn't have one direction or one goal. And as a collective, as Black people, we are also in disagreement. So it's, I think for allies, it's very important to not just listen to those whose words validate your preconceived ideas of what liberation looks like, but to get a collective understanding of what Black people look like. And I think that is one thing that the news is doing a very, very bad job of doing, is polarizing it and saying, well, Black people are saying these facts. And then another news station says, well, our Black people are saying these facts, and creating this polarization within Black communities. You know, Black people aren't a moniker or a monolith. And so like, we think differently, and that's shown in the movement.
As movements and uprisings continue, organizers are strategizing to bring the energy of direct action into the policy arena. So up next, we hear how a musician, biker, and educator is working with the local branch of a civil rights organization to run a transgender education and advocacy program.
Hey everyone, it's Jalian again. To learn what it looks like to center people who are Black and trans in the policy arena, we talked to J. Marie Hill, the Transgender Education and Advocacy Program Coordinator for the ACLU of Missouri, and founder of Music Freedom Dreams, a company that combines their passion for creating, strategizing, and building toward a world where Black trans people can thrive.
We can only uprise in the street for so long, right? As a person who did come through some of the 2012 to 2016 kind of protests, right? A big part of my why I now am at the ACLU, or why I've done other partnership, you know, work, is because we need to be able to have our hands on the levers of decision making.
Whether it's educating the public about how policy can impact their lives, advocating for policy changes, or organizing to build power, their goal is to increase access to support and resources.
When those protests, you know, slow down, we want to be able to still provide people food. We want to still be able to provide people jobs. We want to be able to provide people access. And if we aren't at these organizations and at these institutions that are defining how that all works, we are going to have trouble providing that, right? So it's a big balancing act. And I'm so grateful for those who are in the streets that remind us not to let up, right? That remind us to keep pushing at those edges that people have told us are impossible.
J. Marie is inspired by Black queer creatives like James Baldwin and Audre Lorde. And they're also drawn to the example of Pauli Murray, a queer, gender-bending Black and Indigenous writer, civil rights lawyer, labor organizer, and Episcopal priest, who is friends with Langston Hughes and Eleanor Roosevelt, and co-founded the Congress of Racial Equality and the National Organization for Women. Murray researched and wrote powerful legal arguments that influenced Ruth Bader Ginsburg, were distributed by the ACLU, and shaped a groundbreaking legal decision.
So Pauli Murray was somebody who not only shaped Brown versus Board of Education as a legal strategy, but also went on to become, you know, a reverend, right? Like a spiritual guide for people. And I think that's an example of what Black trans people do, right? It's like the more we give ourselves permission to exist in this world and to be as brilliant as we actually are, once we kind of push out the world from inside of our brains, that we can shape policy, communities, society for generations, and heal it at the same time. You know, it's the world that's corny, not us. You know, it's the world that's pushing against us and what we have to offer.
Like Murray, J-Marie defies categories through gender and their efforts to shape the world. After teaching for Oakland Public Schools, they entered the gig economy in 2013, at a time when movements began to bubble up to grieve and push back against extrajudicial killings of Black people like Trayvon Martin.
But as a person who was at the cusp of both gender struggles and race struggles, where I witnessed, you know, some of the absoluteness that people speak with, it's like sometimes it's only Black men people are talking about, right? And sometimes it's only trans folks who are being murdered that people are talking about. And I was very much like, well, as difficult and present as I feel to these difficult conversations, like I want to make sure that we're focused on life, or at least that I am focused on life. And around that time, my mother was also bringing me out to ride bikes with her kind of cadre of Black women bikers. And so I would join them, and I just felt this embodied joy that I would have every time I was riding with them, you know, whether we're doing climbing or whether we were riding around the river, different things, like there would always be just a joy that we all felt, and the kind of world would fade away. And so in my experiences moving beyond these uprisings, I really wanted to prioritize that joy wherever possible.
Their commitment to embodied joy led them to organize the Black Trans Bike Experience, a ride across the East Coast with stops for meditation, yoga, and somatic practice, as well as opportunities to reflect on how the riders and their ancestors have dreamt of freedom. It has also led them to create music and musical experiences that affirm Black and queer existence and resistance.
Many people know what it's like to go to a live show and leave different than you came, right? Because music really shifts your cells around, you know? It changes how your body, like, it changes the composition of your body, really, right? Because you can't interact with these sounds and these other people in this experience and not leave changed.
Their first single, Here, Queer, and Staying, reflects ideas about radical self-love taught by Sonya Renee Taylor, who observes that there's a ladder, a body hierarchy, with whiteness at the top and Blackness at the bottom.
If you can accept that that's not a ladder you want to participate in, you get to then say, what is the standard that I'm going to live by, right? And most of those standards that we've historically had to buy into have been white, prioritizing white folks, white bodies, slim bodies, slender bodies, right? Muscular bodies, things that make a lot of people have insecurity, things that make a lot of people frustrated with not being able to, quote unquote, live up to that standard, right? Black people, and Black women especially, Black trans folks above all, have been contrary to these standards all along. Right? Black women, Black trans folks have not been included in those things. So we already know what it's like to divest from those systems of body hierarchy. We already know what it's like to not consent to climbing that ladder.
J-Marie suggests that listening to Black people, Black women, and Black trans people who have divested from those systems of body hierarchy in order to love themselves is an essential first step toward listening and paving a way toward justice.
It's not just, let me take the post that you made, let me take the book that you read, and let me just, you know, let me go get paid while I just cite you. It's like, no, how can I be in the same room as you? How can I make sure you get paid more? How can I support reparations being applied in every field, right? As opposed to just listening or just hashtagging because it's the last thing we heard about.
And at the ACLU, they're doing a whole lot of listening to people who are Black and trans, and specifically to sex workers.
You know, nearly 1 in 5 trans or non-binary people report engaging in sex work at some point in their life, right? So that's 20% of folks who are trans or non-binary who have had to, or in whatever order of events, felt like they needed to trade, right? The only thing you have after a certain point, right? Your body is all you have sometimes. And your ability to monetize that is something that everybody does in this world, right? You're actually selling your gifts to your company if you work there, or you're pushing and agreeing to these priorities at this organization if you work there, right? So really, you are still selling your body in some way, selling your work, selling your mind, selling your effort. And so if 20% of trans or non-binary folks are doing sex work, we need people to know like what that's like and why, right? That number, you know, we want people to be safe, whatever they are doing. But the reality is people are having to do that to trade it for money, food, place to sleep, you know, safety, really. Most people often report doing sex work for a place to stay.
Their work has increased in importance during the current eviction crisis in a state where renters have few protections, especially if they are trans. The stakes are even higher for people who are trans and unhoused, which is why the right to safe and secure housing is a top demand for many local activists during this uprising.
There are still people who have been living outside for years, right? And some of that is due to shelters not, you know, accepting them if they're trans, shelters turning them away. Churches often run shelters, and churches are often anti-trans.
They've conducted surveys and interviews of over 200 sex workers to learn more about what they need during this time. While they're still gathering information and figuring out how to move forward, this is one response that they received consent to share.
Sex work is work, right? It's emotional and physical labor that can definitely take its toll. It's a way for people who have been marginalized by society to survive. I'm tired of being demonized for just trying to get enough money to access the basic human rights of housing and food. I'm not lazy, and I'm not trash. I'm a person with dreams and goals. I'm a person who loves and who is loved.
Sex workers have limited options for remote work, and Jaymarie points out that they have been left out of federal and local coronavirus relief efforts. That's a financial shock to people who are Black and trans and are more likely to have difficulty making ends meet. At the beginning of the pandemic, Jaymarie worked with local mutual aid organizers and an LGBTQ-affirming church to distribute over $20,000 to people who are trans and queer, with priority going to those who are Black, trans, parents, and caregivers. But as the pandemic stretches on, the need for food, shelter, and safety continues to rise. So Jaymarie is working with the ACLU and a local sex worker advocacy organization to build the MoHo Justice Coalition, a group of sex workers who will determine how they can achieve a world that supports embodied joy for themselves, their loved ones, and the people they encounter along the way.
Pleasure Activism, for example, is a book and in concept by Adrienne Marie Brown, thrown together from a lot of other people. How can we create a new world without talking to the people who provide pleasure for a living? How can we talk about enjoying the new world if we can't bring pleasure there, right? If there's no dancing, I don't want to go to your revolution, right? People say that, and that's a quote that people often refer to, and it's like, we have to be healed in our relationship to not only our pleasure, but also how we see other people giving each other pleasure. Uprising is a time of learning. It's a time of, you know, revisiting that core part of yourself that says that you deserve more. And so I'm grateful for anybody who is out in the streets getting in touch with that reality. And it is my hope that they stay safe, that no one projects violence onto them, right? Either ideologically or physically. But also, you know, what's keeping me sane is that there are a lot of people who are doing really important projects and efforts in this time of unrest, right? Even beyond the streets. And part of my work is not only, you know, keeping arguments from getting out of hand, but also bringing peace to people. You know, being out in the streets taught me that my home needs to be my respite, right? I can't go out and only and come home to chaos. That's not for me, right? I don't feel like a retreat space. So that's keeping me sane, right? It's like keeping me centered that I deserve that. I deserve a clean home. I deserve, you know, my plants to be healthy. Like, those are things that bring me life, right? And the more that I'm grounded, the more that I'm stable, the more I can share that freedom and that stability with other people. I can't support anybody else if I'm not really well, right? So this is, you know, this is a long struggle. This is a protracted, long fight that we are in. As I mentioned, 400 years is a long time. And if this is our place and lineage, so be it.
This show is produced by me, Jalian Yang, and my co-producer, Lauren Brown. To access support for trans journalists, newsroom resources on how to cover trans communities, and tools to make workplaces more supportive for trans employees, visit the Trans Journalists Association website at transjournalists.org. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.